Welcome to the Essential Knowledge Updates from the Royal College of General Practitioners. My name is Sally Higginbottom and I'm an EKU author and a GP. Today I'm interviewing Dr. Sue Martin, also a GP and author. So this module is looking at somatoform disorders and medically unexplained symptoms. Hello.
Hi.
So could you tell me a little bit about this module you've just been writing?
Well, it was looking at two papers doing an evidence search, really, for what works and what doesn't work in treating somatoform disorders. And it looked at both pharmacological and non-pharmacological treatments.
Okay, so this is based on a Cochrane review, is that right?
That's right, yes.
Okay. So can you tell me, what is a somatoform disorder?
It involves a specific clinical diagnosis, really, that's dependent on specific criteria set out in the DSM. The most recent is the criteria somewhat, and they've changed the diagnostic categories just to confuse things. So it's essential to the diagnosis is that patients have medically unexplained symptoms, or at least it used to be. In the new somatic symptom disorder, you may well still have medically unexplained symptoms, but the emphasis is more on the distress that the symptoms is causing and the loss of function. So you may have distressing physical symptoms which actually have an underlying problem, for example, breathlessness with COPD, but it's the degree of the problem that these symptoms are causing, which may well be far beyond what you'd expect from their physical illness.
Okay, so it's an issue of the difference between the level of distress one would expect from the symptoms and the level of distress the patient is presenting with that gives you an indication that there might be a somatoform disorder, is that right?
Absolutely, and it's really a diagnosis that psychiatrists should be making, or someone with specialist knowledge in this area, rather than us. There are very specific criteria. Although we obviously do see a lot of people, though, that we believe are somatising, which can be a slightly different matter.
Indeed. So in day-to-day practice, what are the common somatoform disorders you see?
Strictly speaking, the somatoform disorders aren't particularly common. You're not going to see that many of them. You are more likely to see people who are somatising, so their physical symptoms are caused by or exacerbated by something that's happening. And I probably, I've got a background in musculoskeletal medicine, so patients tend to come to me with those sorts of problems. Probably it's chronic pain that's the biggest single group of patients that I see.
So is it mainly musculoskeletal pain or pain in other systems?
Mostly it's musculoskeletal pain, certainly the ones I see, but traditionally the somatoform disorders of it have wanted pain in a number of different areas and bodily systems being affected, and pelvic pain probably is another very common one that we will see, that often we can't explain what's going on.
Absolutely, and sometimes these people end up being seen by gynaecologists and gastroenterologists and end up back with us when everyone else has decided they don't know.
Absolutely.
When we're managing these patients who make up, particularly at the medically unexplained symptoms end of the market, a large number of our consultations, what challenges do you think we face dealing with these patients?
All sorts of challenges, and they can be personal and medical. I think it can be very frustrating on a personal level, in that you want to be able to help and you just can't find a way to make a difference. You can be full of doubt that you're actually missing an underlying diagnosis, and it's not infrequent for patients with medically unexplained symptoms to go on and have them explained at a later date. So you've always got that hanging over your head. Plus, they tend to consult quite frequently, so they can take up a lot of resources, and they can also end up having a lot of tests and a lot of referrals and end up on the bit of the merry-go-round, really, which takes up resources and time, I guess, which you should probably be spending trying to help them in other ways by getting them to understand their symptoms better rather than find a cause and focus on that too much.
Yes, I was very struck by one of the findings of the cost for the small number of patients they were looking at in London was enormous, wasn't it?
It was indeed. That was quite a staggering figure. But I guess we can all think of one or two patients who do seem to take up an awful lot of resources for not necessarily an awful lot of gain.
Yes, and I guess that's the the priority, isn't it? If you're thinking about the individual patient in front of you, it's not just that lots of referrals and investigations lead to no grand diagnosis, it's that the patient goes through all those referrals and investigations and comes out no better.
Absolutely.
Ethically, I guess that's a sort of a key point. We're not doing people necessarily any favours by referring them for more and more tests.
No, and you may actually be doing them some harm, and obviously you'll be turning up incidental omas all the time, and then that's adding to their distress.
Yes, because if you do enough tests, you always find something that's slightly abnormal. That's how humans are. So in terms of management for this rather complex set of conditions, what does the review conclude about psychological interventions? What works?
All the conclusions really probably just confirm what we always suspected or knew deep down. In terms of psychological interventions, really, there was only any great degree of evidence for CBT, which was better than usual care, your average GP consultation, that is, but not necessarily superior to enhanced or structured care. And the overall effect was small to medium. And of course, your patients need to consent to it in the first place.
Sure, so they've got to acknowledge that their psychological condition may be impacting on their physical health, which is sometimes a difficult conversation to be had, isn't it?
It can be a very difficult conversation to be had, yes.
Do you have any particular forms of words you use with people that you found helpful when trying to have that discussion?
Yes and no. I tend not to be a terribly structured doctor, I'm afraid. So what certainly can help is to use the form of words that the patient uses. If you start trying to rephrase what they're telling you, you can end up getting distracted into conversations about, oh no, it's not a pain, it's a discomfort, I keep telling you that. Yeah. So it's important to use the words the patients use, because then they can understand that, yes, you are taking on board what they've said, you are listening and you are trying to help, and it's quite a simple thing, but I think it can go quite a long way. And there can be one or two useful phrases to just try and distract them away from what they've actually come with and try and get more into the background. So things like, you know, what else is going on in your life at the moment can open all sorts of bags of worms, and, you know, how are you coping with that, or how is that making you feel? You can get a long way with those few questions, I think, and it can lead you into the conversation. Well, you know, do you think this might be having something to do with the symptoms that you're coming to deal with today? Or do you think they're helping or making this worse?
I see. So it, using the patient's own words is quite a powerful way into helping people. I make the links for themselves sometimes.
Mm, absolutely.
I'm always struck that quite often people have had these thoughts themselves. You're not the first person that's mentioned it to them, that someone in their family or someone they know has said, oh, do you think it's because you're stressed? So it's rarely coming as a completely new concept, but it's still, as you say, not the easiest conversation we have in our day.
Well, no, and the other thing I tend to do a lot personally is just sit there and let the patients ramble on, yeah. Which some people find difficult, but the more they ramble on in a directional way, I will bring them back to the point if they go too far, they will tell you all sorts of things that can be very useful if you're constantly trying to interrupt and direct them to where you want to go. It saves you time in the long run, I think.
I think that's a very useful tip from an experienced GP. So thinking about other options, how about medication? Is there any medication that helps in these conditions?
Well, the new generation antidepressants were found to be moderately effective for physical symptoms and anxiety and depression. And natural products seem to work quite well as well, particularly for physical symptoms.
Like St. John's wort.
But probably SSRIs and antipsychotics were more effective than antidepressants alone. Right. And the problem is with the data for the medication studies was that none of these ran for an awfully long time. They were all relatively short term. I think off the top of my head, it was about 12 weeks. So it probably confirms what we think or we know. But what happens in the longer term, probably that question still has remained unanswered.
Yes, I think that's very valid, because these are patients who've often had symptoms for years. So a study for 12 weeks is not terribly long, is it, to get a sense of what their long term trajectory might be?
No, and it wouldn't surprise me if they end up sort of reverting back to baseline if you watch them for a lot longer.
Yeah. The module mentions reattribution, which isn't a, I think I know what they mean, but not a term I've come across before. Can you explain what you think they're getting at?
There are actually some very nice resources for this online if you just want to Google it. But it's a model really for approaching these sorts of patients. So it helps the patient, first of all, to feel that they've been understood, that you're listening. So it's a case of asking the right sort of questions and making sure you take a full history. It's then trying to change the agenda. So starting off by summarising how you understand things and then trying to kind of direct the patient more to where you think they should be thinking rather than the way they are thinking at the moment. So possibly away from diagnoses to, right, well, what else can we do about this and how can we improve your function and how you're feeling in yourself? And then finally, sort of making the link between what's going on in their life or worries and the physical symptoms that they're getting.
Excellent. As you say, it's a good term for what we commonsensely think we should be doing for these patients, isn't it? So were there any specific additional take-home messages you wanted to leave us with around somatoform disorders?
I'm not entirely sure that the papers get us any more further forward, to be honest. And I think a lot of it does come down to how well we manage these patients in primary care and help them over their problems rather than just saying, no, I don't know what's wrong, go away, which is just very tempting to do. Yeah. I personally did find that the resource that was on the RC Psych website, the leaflet on making sense of symptoms, which is brought out for health professionals, I think it gives it a really nice synopsis of the do's and don'ts of managing these patients, and some really helpful tips in there that we could all benefit from.
That's very helpful. Thank you very much for your time. You have been listening to the Essential Knowledge Update from the Royal College of General Practitioners. Thank you for your time.